Welcome to Beat the Block, a podcast powered by BeatStars, the world's number one marketplace to buy and sell beats.
This is a show where we go deeper than the surface and talk about the best producers and artists in the game, not just about their successes, but also the blocks, dark times, mental health, and unpaid work that comes along with it.
More importantly, we find out they bounce back and turn their downsides into upsides to make a career out of doing what they love so you can too.
Get ready to experience this episode of Beat the Block. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Beat the Block podcast for yet another installment. I'm your friendly neighborhood, Ill Brown.
And this is your boy, Trox.
And this is your girl, Candy.
And we have an extra special guest today. We're all huge fans. I'm sure you guys will be huge fans as well. A change of pace for us, which is super dope. Super excited about this episode. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a different type of guest. Guitarist of the multi-platinum punk band Good Charlotte. Hold on. Let's just not stop there. Not only that, his pen game is so strong, he doesn't just write songs. He's also an illustrator. He's worked with brands like Nickelodeon and Marvel. And if that wasn't enough, he's making beats. I mean, man, how else are you going to take food off our plates, man? I'm just kidding. But please welcome the man that puts the good in Good Charlotte, Billy Martin. What's happening with you, man?
Yeah, what's up, guys? Thanks for having me. Quite the intro, man. I need you to just follow me around and just do that all the time. That's good.
Hey, thank you for being on here, man. We appreciate it.
No problem.
Oh, man, we definitely appreciate you coming on.
Can you tell us, when did you start playing guitar?
I think I got a guitar around maybe 14 or 15 for Christmas one year. It was this awful little guitar that was from JCPenney. I think it had like a speaker built into it.
Wow.
It was pretty rough, but I think a lot of people probably started on a similar guitar. But yeah, I think I was around 14 or 15 probably.
So when you got that first guitar, was it something that you gravitated towards? Was it like a Christmas gift? Or did you just like pick it out and say, I want to, like, how did you get introduced to that instrument?
Yeah, you know, the funny thing, I mean, I've been such a music fan my whole life. I've always loved music since I was a little kid. Like, I remember sitting in my room with like a record player and headphones, like listening to like the Muppets music and stuff like that since a little kid. Just love music, but I have no musicians in my family. No one around me played. I didn't really see people playing instruments, so the concept of me playing music never really hit me until I was in school and we had to do a Spanish project. And everybody had to do whatever they wanted to do. And one kid brought a guitar into school and he set up this little amp and a guitar in the classroom. And his project was, oh, I did a song. So he turns up the distortion really large and starts playing these like fast chords and starts screaming stuff like nachos, burritos, like over top of these punk chords, you know. It was stupid, but, you know, the teacher was like, okay, cool. And she was like, hey, while you have your guitar here, why don't you play something else? And he was like, okay. So he started playing these like Nirvana riffs and like something popped in my head like, wait a second, like you could just like pick a guitar and like play the songs on the radio that I love. Like it just never hit me because I didn't see people playing music. And from the second I saw him play, I was like, I need a guitar. Like I want to do this. And so I was just begging, oh, I want a guitar for Christmas. And yeah, literally from that point on, and I got a guitar and I was obsessed. I played all the time, every day. Just totally changed my life.
That's really dope. So dope to hear that you were inspired like literally by a classmate. Everybody comes from so many different backgrounds when it comes to getting into music, like, and you didn't have any family around to influence that. So that's kind of different than the story that we normally hear. When did you join Good Charlotte? Like, tell us about how that came about.
So once I got a guitar, I started learning and writing songs like right away. They were bad, of course, but I wanted to start writing right away. Really, it was just like, you know, me copying other songs I liked and trying to do my own thing. But, you know, I started a band right away in high school and started playing local shows. And my band would play shows with Good Charlotte. They were like another new band, but they were just a four-piece at the time. It was Benji and Joel and Paul and then the original drummer that we had. And our bands would play together and we started to become good friends. And they kept being like, hey, you should quit your band and join our band. And I was like, oh, no, you know, this is my band. And either way, at one point, as I started getting closer to senior year in high school, one of the other guys in my band was like, oh, I'm going to go to college. And I kind of saw things falling apart. And the other guys were thinking about college and where they wanted to go. And I kept thinking like, well, I'm not going to college. I'm doing music. Like, this is definitely what I'm doing. And the Good Charlotte guys were a little bit older than me. They had already graduated high school and were starting to play real stuff. So I saw that as an opportunity, like, okay, maybe this is a good move. I should leave my band and join Good Charlotte. So I did that. And then I just sort of joined as the second guitar player. Within a year after me joining Good Charlotte, we started getting attention from like major labels and stuff, and things started working out. So, you know, I look back at that as a very smart decision in my life.
When you made that decision, did you think that it would lead to platinum records? Because, I mean, I don't know how serious you were in high school at the time, but like I was in a girl group in high school. And I mean, and I knew, I'm like, this is what I want to do. But the vision, I don't know if it extended as far as like I'm going number one or having platinum records. Like, what was your thought process at that age?
Yeah, I definitely hadn't thought that much about the business side of things. I definitely always wanted to be like in a big successful band. There was never like, hey, let's just be this cool indie thing and maybe it'll be like a side thing. It was like, no, it's all or nothing for us. So it was always, we want to be the biggest band in the world. We want to sell records. And so I definitely sort of had that mindset, but what it took to accomplish that, I mean, I had no idea at 17. I mean, when we actually got offered our record deal, I was still a senior in high school. So I had to have like my dad come in and like meet with the principal and get paperwork signed and stuff like that, because there would be opportunities for us to do concerts and I would have to leave school early to go do the shows and all that kind of stuff. So as that started happening at that age, it definitely started hitting me like, okay, this is a real thing. There's a lot going on. But of course, no one knows if it's going to work. You hope, but you know, it's impossible to know. And I'm obviously very thankful that it did. But yeah, definitely didn't quite have the right maturity yet at that age.
I think one of the cool things is that you actually came up with like your peers. Sometimes when we pursue music, it's like we always want to take the long shot to work with like the biggest artist or the biggest band. So it's really cool that you started a band with people that you went to school with, and then it led to that situation happening. So that's pretty cool. So when you found out that you actually did go platinum for the first time, what was that moment? When did that actually happen?
I'm not sure exactly the moment. The crazy thing is, and I'm sure it's with every artist who's in the same situation, when you're like a new artist and you're going to go platinum for the first time, life is probably a whirlwind. There's so much happening, so many things moving at such a fast pace. You're, you know, flying around the world, touring, doing press, like meeting fans, and there's so much stuff going on. And then all of a sudden, like, usually it would be at like the New York show or the LA show on the tour, where you'd be hanging out in the dressing room, and then all of a sudden, you know, things would get kind of quiet. You're like, what's happening? And you look over and like a bunch of people from the label are starting to walk in the room, and you're like, oh, something's happening. And then they're like, hey, you know, surprise, we wanted to present you with this plaque. That's definitely like an awesome moment, and that never gets old. So I can't remember exactly the first time, probably in New York City somewhere. Our label was always based out of New York when we were starting. So that was it, somewhere at a New York show. But it was crazy. I mean, I'm always super thankful to think that's happened, you know, that not only do I have one platinum plaque, but lots of them, you know.
When you got your platinum plaque, was it like you explained, the label walking in to your dressing room at a show? That's how it was for me.
Yeah. That's pretty much how I think I got all of them, was either just at a show or sometimes in another country or something. You might go to the label's office or something like that. But yeah, it's usually them bringing to the show or something.
Well, that's a nice surprise.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you think that earning like those accolades, was it, I guess what I want to say is, a lot of artists say they don't know that they've made it because they're working until they look back and realize, oh, I did these numbers, or our concert is actually sold out and there's like a line around the block. Was it one of those things that happened where you're like, oh, I actually did this? Is that how you felt?
Yeah, I mean, I agree, because everything is so gradual and then it starts to pick up speed and you don't realize it until it's over. Sometimes it's not till like you get home from tour or something and you sit down just in your house and it's quiet and you start thinking about, man, I've been gone for 8 weeks. I've been to almost every country I can think of. I've been all over the place, and now I'm just home sitting on my couch, and then it all starts to sink in, and you think like, man, I guess I've done something or I made it. But it's definitely hard to soak it up when you're like there in the moment. But I kind of think that's what makes it cool.
Do you think that achieving that much at that age, did it make you think different or feel different about like what you do? Did you come out of it? You seem super humble. You know, some people completely left. Did it change anything about like your approach to music or life once you received your first platinum?
Yeah, I don't think we change anything. I do think there's like a new level of pressure sometimes that gets changed. When you've reached a level of success and you're on a major label and there's money involved, the label's going to come right away and say, hey, that's cool, do it again. And you think like, okay, but stylistically, like I'm on a different thing right now. Like I don't want to make that same record again. And sometimes artists get stuck in that trap where they're like, well, we're paying for the record and we need another one just like the last one. So there's definitely an approach that way. Although we had a really good label for our biggest records on, we were on Epic on Sony and had a great A&R guy. And our most successful records, there was not a lot of A&R in there like pushing us and telling us, you need to do this, you need to change this. They always were sort of like, you know, I think like Good Charlotte was kind of a new thing. You know, we came out when like Britney and NSYNC and Backstreet Boys were like crushing it. Like that was everything. That was running the music industry was that. And then bands like Korn and Limp Bizkit started doing well, and TRL was like a mix of like, you know, cute boy bands and like really like kind of hard rock, you know, kind of stuff. And then Good Charlotte came out, and we were sort of like a mix in between because, you know, we were like, you know, young boys and kind of had like a kind of punk but like kind of clean cut look. And the label sort of had this, well, we don't know what this is, we've never done it before, but it worked, you know, so kind of just keep doing your thing. And so that part, I think we were lucky that we could stay humble and stay just like proud of what we did. But of course, there is always that pressure and that going through your head all the time, just thinking like, you know, am I doing the right thing? Or should we be making the same record? Should we be changing it? So there is that, but not too crazy for us.
How did you manage to handle that pressure? I know probably being a part of the group helped instead of just being like a solo artist, because imagine going through pressure and you're just there. Can you tell me like one of the ways that you guys as a group manage the pressure of like dealing with your label?
Yeah, having each other is definitely huge. I think about all that time that there's pros and cons in being in a band. The pros being that you have each other, that the weight can be shifted around. Like each someone in the band probably has a different skill set and something different that they're good at outside of just the music. You know, some people might be better at visual ideas. Some people are better at handling the press. Some people are better at handling the business. Some people are better at keeping each other grounded. So there's definitely like, you know, an ebb and flow in bands like that. We have to work with each other. The cons being that it's always a compromise too. When you're a solo artist, you get everything just like you want it musically. You're like, this is how I want the drums. This is how I want the vocals, the guitar. This is how I hear it. But when you're in a band, you're kind of always compromising with each other. But yeah, the pro of it being that you have each other. There's definitely times like later in our career, like once we got older, that we realized like, hey, let's put things on pause or let's take a step back, because right now we're out on tour playing like big sold out tour and everybody's grumpy. Everybody's mad about it, you know, because we've got like wives and kids at home and you're like, hey, I want to be home with my family, but I'm on tour right now. And you think, but this is what you've been working for your whole life and you got it, but you've got it and now you're angry about it or you resent it. So sometimes in life you have to find that balance. You have to figure out, you know, how to keep yourself happy and work with each other and talk to each other. If one of the guys comes to you in a dressing room after a show and was like, hey, like I'm not happy, like I'm miserable right now, this is not what I thought, then you talk about it and you work with each other. But I think about a lot of solo artists who are sitting in the dressing room with a bunch of yes men around them telling them, oh, you're the man, like everything's great, you're cool, like sold out shows, like what do you need? And they think, well, I need a friend or I need to go home and see my family or something. But that's not going to happen. But I think when you have a band, like you have like a camaraderie. You know, we've been in this band for 20 years now too, so we've known each other for a long time and we've got to know each other really well, so that definitely helps.
What do you think solo artists should do in that space when they're by themselves? You have lots of experience in the game, so what would be like one of the things they could do to handle pressure?
I mean, surround yourself with good people is key. I mean, we've switched labels, we've switched managers a couple times where you met someone and they might like, you know, present themselves as something you think you need and you start working with them. And 6 months into the relationship, you think, oh, this is not what I thought. And some people think, but oh man, starting over would be detrimental. I don't want to have to find a new label. I don't want to find a new manager. But like, what's 6 months out of your entire career if it's just going to take you farther and farther down like a darker path that you don't like? So make sure, you know, you're making the decisions that you want to make. Make sure you're happy with where you're at. You know, check in with people. Have some people who are not there on tour to help keep you grounded. I mean, I met my wife in high school. We've been together just maybe, I don't know, 6 months before I started playing, or 6 months after I started playing guitar, somewhere around there. We started dating and we've been together for 20 years now. So I'm really thankful to have someone like her who I can always check in on things. I mean, she has a very good perspective on things. And oftentimes I'll be really stressed out about something and I'll bring it to her and she'll say like five words and I'm like, oh, I never thought about it like that. And the whole thing is just different in my head. So having people that you love, keeping your family close, friends close, having a good team, all that stuff is important. You got to realize that you're just like a regular person who is lucky and gets to do what you love. Like, you're not better than anybody. You're not special. And I try to tell myself that because I've come across a lot of artists that we've met at other festivals or on tour, and they just walk into that place like, you know, they own the whole place. And it always bums me out because I keep thinking, you know, you're lucky. You're not special. Yeah, you worked hard and sure, you maybe have some talent, but I don't know. I think you got to stay grounded and having people around you help you stay grounded.
Yeah, I was going to say, during the time that you've came up, there's a lot of teen sensations like the Britney, the Christina Aguilera, NSYNC, Backstreet Boys. Coming up at that time and experiencing fame at that age, what would you say is like the main thing that helped you maintain a good headspace? Was it the people that you were around, like your wife at the time?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to say exactly. Like, I don't want to toot my own horn, but like, I think that I'm a good person. I mean, like, I've always been like, I want to make the right decision. I want to be like a kind person. And I think about that kind of stuff. And in all of our band, for the most part, like, goes out of their way to be like the nice band. Like, when we go on a tour and like a new band will come out to be our opening act, like, we'll go on the first day, walk into their dressing room and be like, hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for being on the tour. Glad to have you guys. And if you need anything, like, let us know. Like, you go on in, make that relationship, say what's up. Because when we went on tour, like, the bands that did that to us, like, I still think about them 20 years later. Like, oh, those guys were super nice. They treated us well. So I think when you're going through all that stuff, like, think about how you want to be treated. Think about what it would be like in that situation. When you start to blow up and things are happening and everybody wants to hand you stuff, I mean, be thankful for it. Don't just take it and be like, yeah, this is mine. I earned this. You know, I deserve this. But I don't know. I think it's simple. Just be nice. You know, be thankful. Be nice. Appreciate what you got because, you know, I'm 20 years into this and it's been a roller coaster. I've seen a lot of highs and I've seen a lot of lows also. And there's been times where, you know, everybody hands you what you want when you're on top. But when you're at the bottom of the roller coaster, like, it's not there. And it's a lot different. It's a lot different. And, you know, and then you'll see things go back up again. So if you're nice and appreciative when things are up, then when you're low, like, people are going to want to help you.
Definitely. It's all about how, whenever you interact with people, you have to think about how you want to be treated. It's a good way to live life. You know what I'm saying? It's just treat people how you want to be treated. Later down the line, you decided to take some other interests outside of music, you know, illustration, your clothing company, Level 27. What made you decide to go in that direction?
You know, actually, like, I thought that art would be my job since I was really young. Before I ever picked up a guitar, I thought, okay, I'm going to draw for Disney or I'm going to draw for Marvel. Like, that's what I'm going to do. And that was always my passion from a young age until I got a guitar. Literally, the second I got a guitar, I was like, oh, screw drawing. I don't do this anymore. Like, I'm going to be a musician. And I really just kind of put it away. But then I found myself with a lot of downtime on tour. There's a lot of time just sitting in dressing rooms or riding on tour buses or being in airplanes or hotels when you've just got nothing to do. So I just thought, you know, maybe I'll get back into art again. Maybe I'll get back into drawing. So, you know, I'd go to like local comic book shops on tour and, you know, pick up some stuff. And you know, that was always inspiring. And I'd sit with sketchbooks and just draw. And, you know, I really kind of got excited about that again. And I thought the reason I did a clothing line was purely because I need it. Sometimes I work better with a goal. Like if I'm like, okay, like I have to finish this drawing and put it out there and it's going to be on something and people are going to see it, I'm going to do my best work versus just filling a sketchbook and I could be like, oh, this drawing sucks and I'm just going to stop now. So I started the clothing line so I could take my artwork, put it on clothes, put it on shirts, and just give myself some motivation. It worked really well for me. It was fun for a while. And as that started to gain momentum and I started getting more jobs outside of clothing, whether it was from comics or other things like that, I realized, okay, I'd rather focus my time on the art that I want to do. I didn't really want to do a clothing line. Clothing, you know, fashion is its own thing. I love fashion. I've always loved clothes. I'm into it. But I realize it's like something serious. Like you have to think about trends and seasons and like it's a full-time thing. And all I was doing was just throwing drawings on a t-shirt, you know? So at some point I let the clothing line go when doors started opening for me to do the other stuff for my art that I really wanted to do. And yeah, it was just sort of like a void that felt empty. Like, oh, I really just like let art go. I just like, you know, it disappeared out of my life and I wanted to have it back. And now I couldn't imagine doing like one or the other. People ask me all the time, art or music, which one's your favorite? And it's really hard for me to pick because I truly just love doing both.
Definitely. I like that perspective on it. Letting go instead of giving up.
Yeah, a little nicer way to put a spin on it.
Being that you've created another career, you know, completely separate from music as an illustrator, working for companies like Nickelodeon, Marvel, how did you get back into the swing of things? Like, basically, how did you, you know, sharpen your sword and with the confidence enough to be like, okay, I'm going back full tilt into illustration?
Really, it was because Good Charlotte took a break. We had one of those moments in the dressing room where we sat down and a couple of the other guys were like, I'm burnt, you know, like I need a break. Like I can't do this anymore. It's not fun anymore. Like I said, we were all like missing our families. And so we said, let's book Good Charlotte on pause for a little bit. We never knew how long it was going to be. I didn't know if it was a 6 month thing, a year thing, forever. We thought maybe Good Charlotte's done forever. It was just like, let's just not do Good Charlotte. Let's just do real life. Let's do regular stuff where we can wake up and have breakfast with our families and take the kids to school and just like do regular stuff. And so everyone liked that idea. And I thought, okay, that could be good for all of our mentals. And so that happened, you know, 6 months passed and I started to think like, okay, maybe Good Charlotte's done. Like maybe we're just not going to do the band anymore. And maybe that was just a part of my life. And I thought, okay, so I got to figure out, like, I got to have a new career. I got to make money. I got a family. I got a mortgage. If we're not going to do a band, I got to figure something else out. And I knew that was something else that I'd always dabbled with. And I had a few connections and a few things had started to happen. And I thought, okay, let's go full time with this illustration thing. And I started reaching out to different companies and different people I knew, and they were always nice to take the email or take the call because they knew my band, and that part was a good foot in the door. But I started realizing, like, why are they going to hire me to draw a Marvel comic when they already have like the best artists in the world already drawing Marvel comics? Like, what does that do for them? Sure, they might give me like a tiny little job here or there just because the name Good Charlotte had some clout and might help, you know, with a built-in fan base, but it wasn't going to get me the work I wanted. So I thought, I have to get good. Like, I have to be able to draw as good as my peers. So for the next 6 months after that, it was just like teaching myself to get better. I never went to any school for art or anything like that. I mean, like I said, I went right from high school to on tour with Good Charlotte. So it was all self-taught, but the internet is a great place. Like, YouTube is amazing for learning like digital art and just different skills and techniques and things that maybe I didn't learn. And it was just about getting better at the stuff that I wasn't good at. A lot of people think, oh, I'm really good at doing this, this, and this, so that's what I'm going to do all the time because that's what I'm good at. But to be truly, truly great at something that you love doing, I think you need to have all facets of it. Like, if you're really bad at drawing hands, you can't just have your characters with their hands behind the back all the time because, you know, like, you need to learn how to draw hands. Like, if you only like to draw characters on white paper with no backgrounds, which I was totally guilty of, then you know what? Spend the next month only drawing backgrounds because you're not going to get better unless you do what you're not good at. So that was really my mindset, was just schooling myself and getting better and trying to get my skills up. And as I was getting my skills up, bigger jobs started coming in. Like, people would be like, hey, you know, did you want to do the cover for this next book? And I was thinking, like, okay, that's cool. And, hey, this cover's really good. Do you want to do the whole next issue? And like, the jobs went from, like, little things to, like, real jobs. And I was thinking, like, okay, I'm getting the jobs that I want to get now because I put the time in to make my skills better. So that was really when I went all in, was because I had time. It was harder when I was trying to balance Good Charlotte and art. There wasn't time always to do both. But then I thought, I've got nothing but time right now. And, you know, 4.5, almost 5 years went by before we decided to get Good Charlotte back together. So I had, you know, almost 5 years just to do nothing but art. And also in that same time, I missed music. 5 years went by when I wasn't playing music anymore. And that's when the beats came around. I was like, I need to start making music again. And, you know, started just toying around on my laptop. And, you know, I need that balance, music and art. I got to have both or I feel like I'm missing something.
What was the first gig that you landed, actually, like when you felt like your skills were up to par? Like, OK, I'm ready to start getting my work out there.
Yeah, the first thing I got offered was to draw a cover for the Ninja Turtles comic for IDW. And that was when I was pumped, because at the time, my oldest son was probably like 6, and like, he loved the new Nickelodeon Ninja Turtles cartoon that was on at the time. That was like his favorite show. He was obsessed with it. He was wearing costumes, like everything Ninja Turtles.
That's tight.
And I'd had a relationship with that company because I had done my own comic book with them a few years prior, where I like wrote and illustrated a book. It was really bad. I'm still proud of it because I did it, but it was bad. And they were nice, and they put it out because Good Charlotte had a name, I think, you know. And I'm still so thankful that they let me do that, because it taught me right away, okay, I don't know how to draw a comic book. This is really hard. This is more than I thought. Like, it really like changed my mindset on it. But because I had that relationship with them, I kind of kept it up and kept showing them new art and kept showing them what I was doing. And here's how I'm drawing now. And I said, hey, I know you guys are doing this Ninja Turtles book that's based off the new cartoon show. Is there any chance I could, you know, try out for that? And they said, okay, do a test piece, you know, draw a cover like as if, you know, you were going to submit something. And I did a cut and I drew one. I sent it to them and they were like, hey, this is awesome. Do you want to do a cover? And I was like, oh, shit. You know, like, it worked. So that was the nice first thing for me. Not only was it cool for me, but at that point, my son was 6. He'd only seen a couple Good Charlotte shows when he was like 2. So like, he didn't really understand the whole thing that like, dad's in a band and goes on tour. Like, he thought like, dad sits home and draws stuff, you know. And then for him, he was like, dad, you're drawing like my favorite show. And so that was a cool moment. It's definitely, having kids and in a family, like, you want to make them proud. It adds like a whole different element of things to what you've done. So it was a cool moment to be like, oh, my first real gig is drawing something that my son was really stoked on. So yeah, that was the first one.
That's amazing stuff, man. So man, just going forward, I like to call it the amazing juggling act. You got beats, illustration, Good Charlotte, you know, you got your family, wife and kids and stuff like that. How do you maintain balance? How do you make sure you get proper energy to each one of those, you know, outlets, man? It's especially the family.
It's definitely a struggle. It's definitely hard to do. I think a lot of it is kind of mental for me too. Like, I get stressed out about it kind of sometimes, you know, like I feel like there's all these things that I need to do each day. Like, it's like a personal mental checklist that I need to do to feel like I accomplished something. And some days I have to tell myself it's not going to happen. You're not going to get them all done today, and that's okay. But there's other days where, you know, like I stay like pretty regimented. I like to keep to some kind of a schedule, because if I keep to a schedule, I know I'll get things done. I prioritize. Micromanaging is really important for me. So usually I wake up, and if there is like a job, like a paid job, that always comes first. If it's like, hey, you've got this cover due, or you've got this design that you have to come up with today, or some kind of a job that someone's waiting for, like that's always the first thing that I do. And then once I knock out any paid things, then I can go into like fun stuff, whether it's making beats, you know, because the difference with making beats is they're not always guaranteed. You could make 100 beats and put them up on your website, and you might sell them and you might make some good money, or you might not sell any of them. And then you think like, okay, but if you have a job that already has a paycheck attached to it, you know, you got to prioritize that stuff. So that's really it. I get up in the morning, you know, we have like a family breakfast, and then I head out to my studio. And kids used to go to school, but now we're in quarantine and they're home all the time, so that changes everything. But luckily my wife has been really awesome.
That's a whole nother challenge.
It is a whole nother challenge. But you know, my wife's been really good about the homeschooling, and she's kind of got like a system down, and lets me go focus on trying to come up with something. But I don't know, that is, you know, I try to spend early days just like focusing on getting work done. And then later, early afternoons is usually like exploratory time, trying some stuff out, trying to write some stuff, seeing what comes out. And then a lot of times in the afternoons, you know, I'll shut down and I'll go outside and play basketball with the kids or like ride bikes or skateboards or something like that and have that like afternoon family time. And then, you know, we eat dinner together. And then like in the evenings when the kids go to bed, then I just hang out with my wife. Like that's just, you know, our time kind of thing. So that's really like the schedule. You got to make sure that like each thing has its own time. And micromanaging, I use that term a lot because I've had other people ask me these questions. How do you do all these things? How do you fit them all in? And I think about like, okay, so I've got 15 minutes to kill right here. What could I do in 15 minutes? In 15 minutes, I cannot start a new song because I'll be thinking about it like crazy. I'll want to finish it. I can't start anything. But in 15 minutes, I could take a beat that I started yesterday, open up the session, and like set all the levels, get it ready for mixing, like something like that, like a small, like trivial task that has to get done, but I could do it in 15 minutes. So that way, when I sit down the next morning, start mixing, everything's ready to go. So it's a lot of stuff like that is figuring out what I can do in certain amount of times and knowing when to do them and when not to. Because I think like most artists, I'll get a little obsessive on something. And if I start something, even if it's just like a little guitar lick or like a drum loop and I like it, like that's all I'm going to think about until I can get back to that drum loop. So I'm thinking like, okay, you don't have time to do a whole song. Don't start a whole song right now. So, you know, little things like that. That's kind of how I go throughout my day.
Yeah, the juggling act is real, man, especially with the unique circumstances that exist now because of, you know, the pandemic and everything. Definitely hope everybody's well on your end with that.
Yo, what up, Ill Brown? I'm thinking of signing up for BeatStars. What's your experience like?
Man, bro, BeatStars came through for me at a tough time, man. Of course, the industry is much different now. It gave me a platform where I didn't have to build my own website and I was able to upload my beats and sell them and engage with the community, man. I had a crazy first month, man. Did like 4K in sales.
Wow.
And I've been a fan and a member of BeatStars ever since. Sign up on BeatStars and start making money with your beats. Go to bit.ly/beattheblock1. Again, that's bit.ly/beattheblock1. Peace. Man, let's fast forward a little bit. For the last album you did with Good Charlotte, you guys actually went ahead and just did the album, recorded, then went for a distribution deal. Considering all the success you guys had going platinum and everything through the traditional way a label usually discovers an artist and puts out music with an artist, what made you guys go the opposite route and say, hey, let's just, you know, do it our way and get distribution?
I think just because we had been doing it for a long time, I think you have to have a fan base to be able to do it that way. It's really hard to do it without a label if you don't already have the fan base. So we were lucky in that sense. I mean, also in that same 4 years that I was focusing on my illustration career, Benji and Joel, two of the other guys in my band, they started their own management company. So they've always been really savvy about the business side of things. Like I said, everybody in the band brings like a different thing to the table. You know, I've been always a little more focused on, you know, merch design, stage design, artwork, that kind of like visual stuff. And those guys have always been really focused on the business side. And they're really smart, really savvy. They're always like studying trends and talking to other managers and labels. And so they thought, man, like, I wish there was a management company out there who understood what it's like to be in a band. Because so many managers and labels, they just send the bands on tour and they're just like, see ya, like, go on tour and just keep working, keep working, keep working. But they're not out there on the road and they don't realize how much of a toll it takes on you, how much you start to wear being on the road. So their whole concept was, hey, let's start a management company who has been on the side of the band and on now on the side of the management and understands both sides. So they picked up a couple small acts and were helping to start like developing those acts. And within a few years, they had a roster of like, I think maybe 25 different, like, you know, rappers, singers, bands, like all over the place, getting major label deals for their bands. And you know, they have a whole staff. They got a studio in LA. So there's like 3 full studios and an office space in there. So they've got their team of probably like 10 people in their management company who work in the office. And then the bands are also in there recording. So that worked out really, really well for just sort of like a one-stop shop for their artists. You know, we'll manage you. We can help get your labels. We can set up your tours. You can record your albums here. And so then when Good Charlotte decided, hey, let's get back and do a new record, they were like, well, we could just be Good Charlotte's managers now because we know what we're doing. We can run everything ourselves. We don't need to give anybody a percentage because, like, this is us. We do it now, you know? So that really was one of the main decisions. Their company's called MDDN. You can check it out. You know, they've done really well, and I'm very proud of them. And it's cool to have, you know, no one's ever going to care about your career like you do. Like, you'll always care more than any manager or any label. So... yeah, so that was really the big decision is we know what we're doing. Let's just do it ourselves now.
Yeah, that's super smart.
Man, that's amazing. Yeah, well, I mean, knowledge is key in this industry, you know what I mean? And, you know, the more you know, the more of the middlemen you could cut out, you know what I mean? So,
sure.
Yeah, that's definitely a dope and fresh and interesting perspective.
That's just the way the industry is going right now. I mean, it's so much more user-based than it used to be. I mean, everyone has so much more control, and it's a good thing and a bad thing because the competition is way more fierce now because some, like, 13-year-old kid with a laptop could, like, make something crazy and put it on the internet and have the same reaction that, you know, someone who's been working for 20 years with a label behind them who's putting $1 million into it. You know, it could just happen to hit. So that, like, that didn't used to be an option before. You could not just release your own music and know that people would get to it. So it's definitely, it's crazy because we came up in, like, the time of record labels and minimal internet, and now we're still going in the time where things are really different. So it's adapting has been crazy, learning how things are changing and what old ways to let go of and what new ways to, you know, to try out and what things work and what don't. So yeah, it's definitely a really good time in music. A lot of people think, oh, the old days were better, but, like, yeah, maybe, but things are pretty exciting right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree that creative control is everything.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's more like a marketplace. You can just streamline everyone to you and build your own fan base and charge what you want and make your money.
Yeah.
So everything on top of that is just a bonus. So with all of your creative pursuits, with the illustration, you know, with the band, with making beats, did you ever get, or do you ever get, creative blocks?
I mean, absolutely. I think that's one of the main reasons I do both, is when one's blocked, I can switch to the other. And it's funny, it's almost like when I'm making music, the whole time I'm thinking about, like, oh, like, man, I want to be drawing. And when I'm drawing, I'm always thinking, like, oh, I should just go make some music. It's almost like the grass is always greener kind of thing, because sometimes when you're hitting that beat block, you think, oh, I should just, like, stop and go do something different. And sometimes it works, but there's definitely times, or... especially right now with, like, quarantine, like, we're on loop. It's just like a big, you know, Groundhog's Day thing where you sit down and do the same thing every day. And I sit down and I think, okay, let's be creative now. Like, sit down and come up with something awesome. And you think, oh, man, I've been doing that every day this week. Like, I'm just done. Like, I don't have any ideas. Or I've made the same beat over and over this week. How do I do something different? So definitely go through that. Everybody goes through that. It's impossible not to. But I think I'm lucky that I can bounce between two different forms of art that keep me inspired, because oftentimes one will definitely inspire an idea for the other.
That's really dope. What are some other ways that you kind of beat that block? Is it just stepping away to spend time with your family, or what do you find that's, like, really, like, that extra thing that you may do?
Yeah, definitely stepping away helps. Sometimes when you step away, you, like, start to really fiend for it, and you're like, oh, I can't wait to get back and do that, because you haven't had it. I like to stay current. Like, I feel like it's part of my job to understand what's happening in pop culture, like why things are popular, what's popular, who's into it. Like, I'm constantly looking at, you know, Apple Music and Spotify, the new music releases, like, what songs are doing well, what artists do I not know of. If I see a song or a name pop up a lot and thought, oh, I've seen that name 3 times this week, but I don't know who that artist is, I'm going to go listen to it and I'm going to research them, check it out. Even if I don't like it, I want to know why it's popular and why it's doing well. I think it's important to know, like, there's always trends that happen in music. it's cool to follow trends. It's also cool to do your own thing. I think there's like a blend, you know, you don't want to just copy everything that's coming out. But if a certain style or a certain sound is really popular and it's what everybody's into right now, figure out how to incorporate that into your music. You know, don't be stuck on like, oh no, I only do like 90s beats. Like that's all I do. And be like, okay, well then like you put the ceiling on your own career right there. Like if you think this is all I do, you're wasting time. So when I want to get inspired, you know, I listen to music. I check out what other things are out there. And sometimes I'll be like, okay, I've been making beats all week. You know, I've listened to so many like new hip hop records and all the beats are starting to sound the same to me. And I don't want to just like make the same thing. So let's listen to rock music. And I'll go and I'll put on something totally different. You know, sometimes a different genre of music, whether it's even just like a guitar lick or like a drum groove or like the tiniest little piano sound in the background of a rock song, you'd think, oh, that piano sound would sound super cool on a beat or something. But you weren't thinking about that when you're listening to the beats because you're sort of hearing the whole beat together. So just different things like listening to different genres, researching, finding out, you know, what's out there, all that kind of stuff just keeps your brain sharp, keeps me inspired.
I agree.
So one of the things we like to talk about on the Beat the Block podcast is mental health. What do you do these days to keep yourself in a good headspace?
I mean, for me, I always say stay busy. Like if I'm not busy, that's when my head starts to drift places that I don't want it to. You know, that's when you start stressing about things, worrying about things. I've always kind of been like that. I don't like to sit still for very long. I don't like to sit around and do nothing because when I'm sitting around and doing nothing, I feel like there's like an urge in me, like I'm wasting time or like there's something I should be doing right now, or I start to feel guilty about it. So for me, I like to keep busy. I like to surround myself with things that make me happy. And that's why I find it really hard to work really hard at music and art to make sure that they're always in my life because they are like a release for me. Not only is it fun, but it's like a stress relief, but I've also managed to make a job out of it, you know? So there's some pros and cons in that. Sometimes you think, oh, well, it took all the fun out of it because now it's a job and I feel like I have to do this. And it used to just be fun. But it also gives me excuse to know that like every single day I'm going to draw something or make some music every day. And as long as I get that every day, it helps keep me in that good place. There's definitely times where, you know, we'll take a trip or something with the family and like maybe 2 or 3 days will go by where I'm not making any art or music. And of course I'm enjoying the trip and I like to go somewhere and do different things. But there's like a little thing in the back of my mind that is just like, oh, if you don't make some music or art, like you're going to explode. Like I definitely feel like I need that. But also, like I said before, having good people around you is good for your mental health. Like you need to have a support system. You need to have people, you know, not everybody is married with a family. Like some people are young and they're 15 and they're not even thinking about that. And maybe you don't have a great relationship with your parents, but there's probably other kids out there or other friends out there who go through the same things as you. And crazy is we see a lot of this in the Good Charlotte world. Like we have a lot of songs about this. The first song on our last record is called Self-Help. That's like the name of the song. And it really, it's like Joel, like our singer, it's mental health is like a really important thing to him. He likes to talk about it a lot. He likes to discuss it with the fans. And we would do meet and greets at almost every show where we would do like a VIP experience and you could come, you know, come before the show and we would do like an acoustic performance. We'd play like one song for like a handful of fans and then do a Q&A where they could ask questions. And almost every time the questions were like deep, you know, kids would have some really heavy stuff to ask us. And it was always around, you know, mental health stuff or suicide or like family abuse and things like that. And almost all of them would come through and say like, your music is what saved me. Your music is what helped me. Your music is why like I'm still here. And, you know, obviously that's like really heavy to hear like on a daily basis. And, you know, that's like another one of the reasons sometimes where you think like, I gotta take a break from this because you appreciate it and you love hearing this stuff and love to know that you're helping. But day after day, you're on a tour for 30 days and you spend an hour every one of those 30 days like listening to people telling you like really sad things about their life. And sometimes you know, that weighs on you. So you take it, you sort of feel a responsibility, like, okay, a lot of our fans are people who have been in a really tough spot in their life and needed something positive to bring them out of it. And it's awesome that our band was there for them. So a lot of the songs on the latest record, you know, when Joel was thinking lyrically, he's like, I want to write specifically to those fans and maybe dig a little deeper to talk to them and try to like help them and let them know, like, we've been through it. Other people are going through it. Like, having something, whether it's music, whether it's a friend, whether it's some kind of a hobby that takes your brain to like a good place. Everyone needs to have that. You know, it's different for everybody. It might be music. I assume if you're listening to this podcast, it's probably music for you. Like, music is there for a lot of people. But I think that's one of the biggest things with, you know, mental health is knowing what it is that can bring you back to the happy place. Even if you can't find it, even if you struggle to like get to that happy place, but you know what it is, you know, but like not knowing what your happy place is like a scary thing, you know? So I think that's something that people need to figure out, is like, what does make me happy and how can I get back to that place in my mind when I need to go there?
Definitely. Definitely. You mentioned surrounding yourself with things that make you happy. What are some examples?
You know, like kind of the same stuff I've been saying. My family, music, art, like, I feel like it's not necessarily like physical things around you, but for me, it's like, you know, where can I take my brain that it's occupied with the right kind of thoughts, you know, because everybody is easy for your brain to drift and your thoughts to go, you know, down a dark rabbit hole of whatever, you know, you're thinking about. But if you're busy with the things that make you happy, it's harder to, you know, those things get blocked out. So I feel like surrounding it is just, oftentimes it could be like putting on a record from high school that for me, like that record was like a really special record for me and it set me off. And sometimes it's like crazy what like an old record from the 90s, like I'll put it on, hit play, and the first song will come on and instantly you're like in a different headspace or something, because that record makes just has you good memories. Like, nostalgia is a very powerful weapon, you know, nostalgia does a lot for people. So simple things like a few like trigger songs that just always put you in the right place. Maybe when I'm drawing, there's a couple certain characters that I always like to draw. Like if you're stuck thinking like, oh, I can't draw today, or I've lost it, or this isn't happening, maybe just like go back to that one thing that like you are comfortable with. And that just might help, you know, just kind of like turn your brain a different way and start changing your thought process a little bit.
Indeed. Speaking of things that make us happy, let's dig more into your beats, man. Take us through the process of you, first of all, making the beat, and second, finding your own sound within it.
That's definitely also tricky. Like, finding your own niche in the music industry world is tricky. I've always been really into bands that had electronic elements in them, you know, like Nine Inch Nails or Marilyn Manson and that kind of stuff in the 90s. It was always rock music, but with like programmed drums and keyboards and just weird sounds. And for me, I was always really gravitated towards that like mixing of genres. And I liked that. So I'd always like programmed drums and played keys and stuff like that. And I guess like making beats, it sort of just happened. Like, I was making stuff that was just sort of like demos, and you couldn't get in a room with a drummer, you know, so I would program my own drums. And I just like really got into it and had fun. And, you know, I grew up in the 90s. So like, you know, guys like Snoop and Dre were like everywhere. And like, there was no one cooler than Snoop and Dre, like when I was, you know, 15 or something like that. So I also grew up in just outside of Baltimore in the suburbs, where like hip hop just, you know, ruled. There was like 10 hip hop stations for every rock station. So I've always really listened to both. I've loved the idea of genre mashing. I've loved the idea of not being stuck to one type of music. I think so many people like get into something and they only listen to one type of music, but it's always been like rap and rock for me. I love both. So yeah, making beats. I started making beats. And like a lot of other producers, I got really frustrated because I would send beats to rappers and they were like, oh, this is great. You know, how much you want for the beat? I'd tell them how much it is. I'd send them the beat. They'd record to it. They'd put the song out and I'd be like, when are you going to pay me? And then they would just disappear, you know, just totally ghost me. And I kept thinking like, man, you know, not to sound too cool, but like, you know, I'm like a platinum selling artist and these guys have like no, like they're just starting out. You would think there's a certain level of like respect or relationship building. Like, if I was a new artist and someone who like was really successful, like threw me a bone, like, hey, let's work together, I would want to keep that relationship up. But it happened so many times where it kept getting burnt, and then finally, man, I did a whole album for this guy. 16 songs, a whole album. We worked for probably 8 months on this, whether we were sending tracks back and forth. He even like came down to stay at my house for a couple days to work on it. We did a whole album. I did the whole thing for free. And then at the end of the thing, I said, listen, we need some kind of an agreement that says, you know, the splits, like I get publishing for this. And I said, I want something where like, if you get signed to a major label within X amount of months from this project, you know, I get like a little kickback, like as a production fee. And he like freaked out, was like, you know, this is my music. You have nothing to do with it. Not only was he so mad about it, but he's like, I quit the music industry. He was like, I'm not putting the album out. I quit music. He's like, you killed my inspiration. He was so mad that I wanted any money wow. from the music that he was like, I'm not even putting the album out. So I thought, man, making beats is hard. You know, working with some of these rappers is frustrating. It's a lot different than rock music. So I kind of was like, I'm not going to do this. Like, this is not for me. This is a waste of time. And this was like right at the beginning of that whole like Good Charlotte's going to take a break thing. So I thought, nah, I'm going to do the art thing instead. Like making beats isn't for me. And I put it aside and focused on the art for a while. And then a few years later, I ran into like a friend at like a concert somewhere. And he was playing keys for someone, and we were just kind of talking keys and stuff. And he was like, oh, I didn't know you're into that. You know, like send me some stuff. And so we just started talking about that. And then he introduced me to a couple other friends who were making beats. So I learned about the whole like loop game. I was like, okay, a lot of people are sending loops. Like loops is like a really big part of the producer community right now. So like there's a lot of collabs going on. And so I sent a couple guitar loops to another producer, and within like a month of that, he was like, hey, Lil Xan's gonna use this beat and it's gonna go on his record. And I thought, okay, hey. So like I tried it again with a different mindset, and within a month I already got a placement on like a real record. So that really kind of like, you know, set the fire off in me thinking like, okay, like there, I can do this, but maybe it's a little different. I'm not gonna work with people who aren't serious, and I'm gonna have, you know, Benji and Joel's management company represent me as a producer so that they can go in and handle the business side of things. And just like went into the whole thing with a different aspect, realizing it's not going to be easy. It's not going to happen right away. But that was really it for me. It was so, you know, the process is just make good stuff and you know, figure out where I fit in this beat world, because it's a very saturated community. As you know, there's a million people trying to do it right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's funny. I'm pretty sure Candy, Will, and I have similar stories as to...
Yes, we do.
...what you were talking about as far as getting burnt.
I'm sure.
Yes.
Oh, man, why would they do that to you, though, man? You just seem like a really nice guy. That's just terrible, man.
You know, it only makes you stronger. It does, man. It really does.
Man, your experience as... with your manager, like how has that helped you, like just having your friends manage you now?
You know, there's pros and cons to it also, because I think sometimes it's like hey, I need you to do something for me, and they're like, you know, like, oh cool, you know, like when we see each other this weekend we'll talk about it. And I'm like, okay, no, like if I was one of your artists you wouldn't say that, you know, but because we're friends, like it's a little more casual, so that part of it is like different. But like I also know that like their interest is like they truly care about me. Like some other managers, they just would see dollar signs. They think, okay, if it's not making me money, I'm not interested. But I've known these guys for 20 years, and I know that like if I'm like, hey, I need some advice on something, or I want you to look at this contract, like they're actually going to look at it. They're actually going to try to figure out how can we sweeten this deal, how can we make this better for Billy, how can we get the best thing out of it. And that I really appreciate, because being in a band, when you're not the lead singer, it's a different story. It really is. And anyone who tells you who is in a band, you know, who's not the lead singer, it's hard, because when you walk in a room, the record labels, the manager, everybody, they go right to the face they know. They're like, oh, I know that guy. You know, I've seen his face. And sometimes the rest of the guys are sitting back there thinking like, okay, you know, we've also been putting the time, and we've also been putting the work in. We're part of this too. So we've had a lot of managers who have, you know, I've seen that where they're kind of like just a yes guy, and they pay attention to the singers and everybody else gets overlooked, and that's really frustrating. So having a manager who like is in the band and knows me really well, like I don't ever feel like I'm having to compete. You know, like I feel like if I call him up, we're having a real conversation. Like I was saying before, like having a team of people that you trust, you feel good about is important. Because if you have a manager who also manages like 50 other producers, and you know they're, you know, those producers are killing it and you're not, you're gonna be on the bottom of the totem pole. they're not going to call you back as fast. You're not going to get the response you want. So having someone who like really believes in you or like you have a good relationship with does really help.
Absolutely. I could speak from experience on that. You've said in other interviews that you're like way more open about your beats and you're not necessarily like exclusive or secretive about it. Someone in your position could say, oh, I'm a platinum artist. Why should I put these out in the public like that? Could you explain that to us?
The way I look at it is I kind of go back to the art and I thought like, okay, so like I'm in a band that people know, but I want to be successful in my art career. So no one's going to give me the job if I'm not putting in the same time and working from the ground up like all the other artists did. Like, I don't want to get the freebie on like step three or something like that. I want to start on step one and I want to build it up because that's how you get like that foundation. No one can pull the rug out from underneath of you if you've built your own foundation from the ground up. But if you got that like freebie in on step three or something like that, and someone pulls it out from you and you drop all the way back down to step one, it's like, I got to start all over again. So I felt the same way with beats, was like, okay, sure. Like maybe it might like look bad for my brand to think this guy's a platinum artist and he's selling beat leases for $30. And like, why is he doing that? But at the same time, I'm not like an established hip hop producer. People don't think like, I need to get some beats today. Oh, I bet the guy from Good Charlotte makes dope beats. Where's his beats at? Like, no one's thinking that. That's not where like their mindset is. So I started to think like, I want to understand the community. I want to research. I want to learn about it. So I started learning about like beat leases and loop kits and collabs. And like, that's where things were at right now. And I didn't realize that when I first started making beats, like how the community, it's a community. It's like a whole thing. Like this whole world of selling and making beats. It's more, I think, than people realize until you dig into it. So I wanted to, you know, I wanted to have a beat store like everybody else. I wanted to collab with other up and coming producers. I wanted to learn from them. I wanted to see how are other guys selling beats? How are other guys making beats? Like whose beats are selling the best and why are they? And so for me, I was very open about it because I had to be, I had to learn. I wanted to see what I needed to do to get there. And hopefully from starting from the ground up, you know, I've started to build a different fan base, a different foundation, because most of Good Charlotte's fans like don't care that I make beats. They're not buying beats. They're not listening to beats. They're not rappers. Like, that's not my target audience. And I figured that out right away. Like, okay, I have to find out a way to talk to who is buying beats, because the fan base that I have is not buying beats. So it was almost like starting over a new career again. I wanted to do it right. And I thought for me, that just seemed like that's the right way to do it.
Did it feel inspiring in a way that you were starting over?
It definitely did, just because when, you know, if you do anything forever, the same thing over and over again, you want to do something different. So making rock music forever is fine. And I love doing it. And I've always, like I said, there's programmed drums and keys and loops and stuff on all the Good Charlotte records that I've done in the past, but it was different making beats, just knowing that this isn't a Good Charlotte project. No one else has ever heard me do any kind of music outside of Good Charlotte. Like, I didn't really have my own personal brand outside of the band musically. I did artistically, but not musically. So it was exciting to think, okay, people are going to hear something new that I've done before and, you know, possibly open up new doors and take me down a different path in life. So that part of it is exciting. I love to share what I do, for, you know, whether that's, I saw like some quote that like Halsey and Zane Lowe were doing an interview, and she said something to the extent of like, musicians are like something like egotistical enough to think that everyone's going to want to listen to what they do, but too insecure to feel good about the music that they're making or something. The quote was something about that, and it really like hit the nail on the head for me. Like, okay, wow, that's crazy. Cause it's very true that like the whole time you're doing it, you're thinking, I'm not good enough. Like, is this good? Are people going to like it? But the second you finish it, you put it right out there for everybody to listen to, you know? And like, that's a strange irony right there. But it's very true. So it was exciting, inspiring to think, okay, I'm going to put new music out there and people are going to hear this, and who knows what they're going to think.
And it's so interesting because like hearing your perspective from someone that is super accomplished and successful, to now starting like from the bottom in a different space, but yet still music. I think our listeners would really appreciate to listen to like your take on starting, you know, your beat store and all of that, because most of us, that produce are in the same boat. So with that being said, like, what are you looking forward to now in your career? Like, you did the whole band thing, super accomplished, and that's like a legacy level. And then you have your art, which is something that you can always do, and you've been super successful with that. So it's like, what's the next move for you?
I mean, I really love producing. I've always thought about being a producer. Like, even when we were young, working in the studio with other awesome producers on our albums, I kept thinking, like, that's what I'd like to do when I get older. You know, we still do Good Charlotte on a smaller level. We're never going to, like, do, like, a world tour where we're out for 2 years straight on tour again. That's just not where our headspace is. So it's cool to know that Good Charlotte will be there. But when we're not there, I would love to be in the studio. I'd love to produce for other bands, you know, for other artists, whether it's like being in the room and producing is always more fun than just selling beats. But it's also like there's a lot of waiting. Like, if the only time you're making music is when you're in the room producing, like, you don't have time to work on your skills. So making beats is really, like, it's nice because it helps you keep your skills up. You've got ideas. And so really for me, like, the ultimate goal is producing. I mean, I wouldn't mind getting into soundtrack kind of music, video game stuff, movies, like that kind of music, just because it's all that kind of programming and electronic and that kind of stuff. But just, I don't know, I love making music. I love the idea of trying different things. I like working with different artists and not going on tour, like being able to wake up, take my kids to school, and then, like, go in the studio and work, and then come home and still be with my family. That for me, that's kind of the best of both worlds. So that's really my end goal here is I'd love to be a producer and just kind of continue to make music until I'm old and don't want to do it anymore.
Is there any artist that you would like to work with now?
Yeah, there's tons of artists I'd love to work with. I mean, I hate to say it, but I mean, Juice WRLD would have been at the top of my list. I think he was someone who was doing something really, really, really special. Juice WRLD and Lil Peep, both of those two, and they're both gone, which is crazy because I don't think there's any two artists out there who we're able to, I feel like they both, so many people, like rappers, have tried to pull the rock world in and it's been like a train wreck, you know, like they've tried to do it and it was just bad and it just, like, didn't work. But I look at both of those guys and I knew they grew up listening to both. It wasn't like, oh, I've listened to rap my whole life and someone gave me one rock record and I'm gonna make rock music now. You could tell Juice WRLD's melodies, just like his lyrical content, he listened to both, like, and it was like he was really good at putting them both together. And same with Lil Peep, they were just onto something. I feel like those artists were the most closest to reminding me of what it was like when Good Charlotte first started out, you know, like artists who reflected on, like, misfit kids who didn't have a place to belong and they felt sad and they needed their music. And there was, like, both of those artists, like, just did that, and their fan base seemed really similar too. So crazy to think, you know, for the last year or two, people are like, who would you want to work with? I'm like, well, those are my two favorite new artists, and it's crazy that they're both gone. But as far as other artists out there, man, who do I love? Like, big artists, I love Roddy Ricch. I like Nav. I think both of their newest records are good. You know, so much out there. Like,
it is a lot out there.
There's so much out there, and I'm always trying to look and see what's coming out. But, you know, I have a ton of records that I've finished with other, like, big artists that just haven't come out. And that's another really frustrating thing with producers is you do a track and you hear it. And then, you know, like, another friend of mine, Ricky P, who's part of Taylor Gang, I sent him some loops. And, like, the next day he sent me back a song with my guitars and Wiz rapping over top of them. And I was like, yo, that's crazy. Like, the next day he goes in the studio with Wiz, but the songs never come out. Every time he puts, like, a Taylor Gang project out or anything, I'm, like, checking to see if it's going to make the record. But so that's another hard thing with producing is I have some songs with other big artists that I'm fans of, but I don't know if anyone will ever hear them.
That's definitely a challenge of being a producer, man. Is this stuff ever going to see the light of day, man? I have like folders of stuff that I've done with major artists that I've considered leaking, even at times. Like, man, the world needs to hear this. You know what I mean? Like really good stuff, man. But, you know, you always want to make sure you salvage the relationship with people and stuff, man.
Of course, yeah.
I think it's going to be extremely inspiring to the people who listen to this podcast, this particular episode, that you are on BeatStars in the trenches right there, and they can see that you're out there grinding just like them, you have a page, they're going to be like, yo, Billy Martin's on BeatStars, fam. Like, I'm headed in the right direction. Where else can the people find you online, and what's your tag name on BeatStars and everything like that, man?
BeatStars is just my name, Billy Martin. For most of my socials, I use @TheBillyMartin, because you can guess it's a very, very common name. And my website is just TheBillyMartin.com, and I link everything from my art, my BeatStars, my socials, everything kind of links off of TheBillyMartin.com. So that's the best place to find all my stuff.
Awesome. One-stop shop, man. Well, we appreciate you for coming on today, man. Learned a whole lot.
Man, thanks for having me.
One of my favorite interviews so far, man. I love your
thank
humility,
you, thank
man.
You.
It felt
super
like
insightful.
Like we've known you our whole life, man. It was very inspiring for us, man. So with that being said, we're going to get up out of here. And you know what I'm saying? Get to the next episode, which I like to say. So I am Ill Brown.
This is Trox.
Yo, and this is your girl, Candy.
And we will indeed see you on the next episode. Big old peace signs for that one. Peace.
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 Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Beat the Block. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. It helps the show a lot. See you on the next episode. Peace.